some say. This is the blind and ruthless inevitability of progress. Matrices multiplying, transformers transforming, learning, evolving, accelerating. It promises miracles, whispers threats. Will the revolution be vibe-coded? Forget the hype. What's really happening under the hood? We're finding out. This is the acceleration. Welcome, my dear accelerationists, to episode number 5 of this podcast. I'm your host, Avi Burra. And today, we're rewiring two of my favorite neural pathways, decentralized AI pipes and SATS-denominated micropayments. Our guest is Shrumanik, open-source wizard, freedom tech maximalist, and now the architect of Routster, a brand new permissionless LLM routing marketplace that bolts NOST relays onto Cashew eCash, so every prompt is a peer-to-peer lightning payment. OpenRouter meets Bitcoin, but with Tor baked in and zero KYC. If that weren't spicy enough, you might have bumped into his earlier LangChain toys, the code interpreter API that mimics ChatGPT's advanced data analysis mode, and FunkChain, the most Pythonic way to wrangle structured outputs with LangChain and Pydantic. We're about to decode how all those tinkering sessions culminated in Routster's Smart Client SDK, why Blind Mint eCash beats invoices, and whether Routster improvement proposals, RIPs, were named so morbidly on purpose. Buckle up, pour that coffee, and let's accelerate. Shrumanik, welcome to the acceleration.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to accelerate, and I think I'm also a accelerationist, so I think that's the perfect podcast to be on.
Excellent. Well, why don't we start here, because I found out about you when the Routster announcement came out a couple of days back, I believe. What itch were you scratching when Routster was born? What unsolved problem was bugging you? And you said, you know what? Routster fixes this.
So I was thinking about this idea for actually like a few months, but I haven't really crystallized it till that point. So back in like end of last year, I was at the Baltic Honey Badger. So that's a Bitcoin conference in Latvia. And I heard about DVMs, so data vending machines. And this kind of got me really excited to think about, like, how can you maybe sell large language models over a Bitcoin protocol? And I first thought, okay, maybe just having, like, chatbots in your DMs, so in Nostr. But this didn't really felt right, so I was working on other projects and thinking about it more. And then recently I was talking to Calvadev. He's building Shopster, which is also a really nice application, so you can shop freely on Nostr. And he told me a lot about like eCash and kind of like how it works and how he has built kind of his application on top of that. And then I thought back on to like DVMs and kind of like I had like a more clear idea in my head how this could be built out on the Bitcoin protocol, so on Nostr and on eCash. So yeah, that's when I told a friend like Evan, like let's build this. He's really good at front end, so he built the landing page and the chat app, and then we went together, started Routster, and Yeah, no, we it's still like really early, but we're trying to build like a whole ecosystem where you have a protocol, you have a marketplace, you have maybe example applications, yeah, like a decentralized LLM routing marketplace where you can have, you have users and you have providers. So providers can run their own models, or they maybe route other sources of LLM models into the network and they sell it. So they charge a fee for the tokens. And then you have people who are just, they just want to chat with LLMs, and they just have some, maybe they have a chat app, or they have like Cursor or anything that consumes language model APIs, and they just plug in a cashew token, and then they can use that as payment method. So you don't need to create an account, you don't need to KYC, for example, for the new O3 model, you need to KYC. So yeah, that's kind of the idea, and that's the project we are building.
So let's talk about the target end user for Routster. This sounds like a person who wants to have access to any LLM tool of their choice, but they'd rather not go through the process of signing up with, let's say, an OpenAPI OpenAI or with an Anthropic, right, and giving all their personal information and their payment information to get API access, but rather would want to be able to use it, pay for it without KYCing themselves. So, but clearly, so let's take the example of OpenAI here. Someone has to do that, right? Someone has to get API access, get the API key for O3, the example you picked. So is Routster playing that intermediary role, or how does that work?
Yeah, so currently there's basically only one provider, and that is Routster itself, because we haven't launched the marketplace. Currently, basically, it's just a proxy to OpenRouter, which is actually not that open. It's like a it's a company who is like just routing these LLMs, and they're not open source, but they have all the models, so we just choose them as the MVP solution. But at some point, other people can just publish their own endpoints, and other people can just copy the thing we are doing and publish an OpenRouter endpoint, or publish an OpenAI endpoint, and they will just use their own accounts, their credit cards, to kind of pay for the service, but then offer it on the Routster marketplace to anyone who wants to pay with cashew. So if Routster's gone, like, other people will take the spot and will just provide their accounts to give you KYC access to OpenAI.
Got it. So someone, clearly there is a KYC process, but there's no getting away with it with these systems, right, with OpenAI, yeah, and Anthropic. So basically Routster is a service that allows the user to, in some sense, arbitrage the KYC process, because the provider is the one who's doing the KYC, correct?
Yeah. But also some people maybe don't want to use OpenAI models. They want to just use like Llama 4 or like some local hosted models. So you will also see providers that just have maybe a tiny GPU farm in like some offshore region, and they will just sell these tokens on the same marketplace. So you can basically sell any kind of tokens you have.
So that's an interesting use case there, because the compute, the API call cost for, we'll use the open AI example. The API, that's all baked in, right? The compute is baked in. It's just, you know, you pay per API call, or you buy some credits and you get a certain number of API calls with that. But in the case of open source models, they actually need to be hosted somewhere, right? The compute has to be somewhere. So there's two legs to that, if it's Llama or Mistral or any of these other models. So would the provider in that case, I think you alluded to this, they would have to host the compute in their cloud or in, even at home if they so choose. And then would the API call cover that from their perspective? The cashew token.
Yeah, so currently the kind of payment layer with cashew, it's basically just a proxy that you put in front of any existing language model APIs. So if you host your model at home, you maybe have Llama CPP or VLLM, which are inference applications that also serve a OpenAI type API. And then you just plug that proxy in front of the API you're hosting, and the proxy will handle the payment and kind of the authentication or like restricting if there's not enough balance. And the OpenAI API gives like a token count. So it says, okay, you said hello, and then you get back a question with how can I help you? And then with that response, you get like a small like token amount. So then the proxy is calculating, okay, how many sats per token, and then kind of processing that payment. So you provide a cashew token, and then you provide a token that is bigger than the amount that you likely pay, but then you get back a refund. So you only pay kind of for the token you actually had in the request.
Got it. And who is the Mint issuer, or I guess who is the Mint, the entity that's running it?
So it can be basically any Mint. We thought of maybe launching a Mint, like mint.razor.com, but maybe it's also better if it's just like any third-party Mint, then it's like not directly affiliated with us. But currently we use Minibits, but you can basically plug in any Mint. You just need to change the environment variables.
Got it. And where does Noster come into all of this?
So currently Noster is not yet implemented, but the idea is that Noster serves as the marketplace layer. So people can publish their Onion address or their real web endpoint address on Noster, and then you will have marketplace clients where you can just say, okay, search me all the published endpoints that have this specification. So then you just search through Noster for all these like language models. You can maybe filter by, okay, I only look for Llama 3 models. And then you get a list of models. And because on Noster you have a kind of network of social trust, so you can filter by, okay, Jack Dorsey liked the provider company, so I kind of trust this company. So you can filter through the network you already have in Noster to gain a certain trust to the provider, because you don't want to have like malicious provider that just take your tokens and don't offer you any service.
Yeah, I mean, Noster comes in theory anyway, with Web of Trust baked in. So you can filter by the model type and presumably by, let's say, the providers that your contact list, right, or your network have used, or the trusted subset of your network have used. Yeah, I think that's a powerful idea. So essentially a decentralized marketplace for buying no KYC access to models and also to compute in many cases, right?
Yeah. So people could build other applications on top of that. Like maybe people could build certain DVMs that live in like a decentralized way. So the DVM doesn't need to have a GPU on board. So it's just a like stateless DVM bot that like redirects the sats to like the provider and then comes back with some answer. think like just having this fundamental layer of language models enables other applications to build on top that also have like a decentralized nature.
Yeah, now, Shrumanik, for folks who are non-technical here, do you mind explaining what DVMs are quickly?
Yeah, so DVMs are data vending machines. So if you imagine a traditional vending machine, you just go to it and there's a certain offering. You select what you want and then you pay and you get kind of your service. And DVMs are like vending machines for data. So it's more like kind of a chatbot in your direct messages. For example, in your Nosta apps, you have direct messages. And then you can just text the bot like, here's my article. Can you give me a summary? And then the bot gives you like an invoice here. Can you pay it? And then I give you the summary and then you pay it. And after the bot received the confirmation of payment, then you get your service kind of. But you can think about like any type of data service. Like there are also data vending machines offering more sophisticated algorithms to filter maybe the most exciting posts of last week on Nosta, where you maybe need to do like some more compute to figure out, okay, which is actually the most exciting post or something. Maybe some algorithms even use language models to filter something. So there can be services that we require a bigger amount of energy. And so you need to pay for it because nothing is free. And then that's kind of like the business model. Like you just host a data vending machine, you offer that service and you can get paid.
Yep. That's great. So let's talk about why you chose Cashew instead of plain old Lightning. What superpower does Cashew give the users and providers that Lightning doesn't?
So I thought of this idea before I really knew about Cashew, and I thought of doing it maybe with like bold 12 invoices or like how it's done. There's this like Nosta Connect with Lightning Node. So there are other ways this could be done. Cashew just made it like really easy to implement an actual application with it. Also, Calva, the friend I talked to, he said like implementing Cashew into his shop application was just 7 lines of code. Cashew is like really, really simple to work with as a developer. And also to build on top of, like if other people want to build on top of Routester, something else, it will also make it way easier for these other people to just do like some small Cashew implementations, and they don't need to worry about like more complex Lightning stuff, because often this involves like running a Lightning node or having like some third-party Lightning API. Like Cashew just makes things really easy.
Makes sense. So let's say, Shrumanik, I decide to become a provider and I want to run one of the big Mistral models. What is the minimum viable setup I would need to make it happen?
There are people who actually got language model to run on phones and even like a smartwatch. So you can run language models nowadays on like pretty small devices, and but the question is, do people care if it's like just a tiny, like not that smart model? Maybe not, maybe some people want exactly that. And the proxy itself doesn't require a lot of power. It's just like a few HTTP requests. So you just need to figure out, okay, which model do I want to run, and try to run it on your device. Maybe you want to run DeepSeek, then you probably need a bigger server, and then you just plug in Roadster in front of that, and we have a Docker container, so you could do that with Docker Compose, or you just run the Docker container, you put a few environment variables onto that Docker container that contain your payout address, and you can specify like how much each request costs in sats or some other things. We also need to improve documentation, like it's still early, but yeah, then you have your proxy in front and you just need to publish on Noster that, look, you can connect to my API, you can pay with Cashew. We want to at some point have a separate like Noster schema kind of, so like a separate message type for these kind of listings. But currently, this is how you could publish your own Roadster node, your own provider.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm a user and I want to start using Roadster today, what do I need to do?
So we are currently hosting one provider endpoint at api.roadster.com. So you can basically call that API like a normal OpenAI type API, and you just put in a Cashew token with enough balance, maybe like 50 sats or 100 sats, as API key. And then you can just do requests. You put in the model you want, and you can use the same Cashew token as many times as until kind of the balance expires, and then you get an error message. So
help me walk through that flow here. So let's say I open Cursor and I say, you know what, for today's vibe coding session, I want to use the full power of O3, right? So I spin up, I get a Cashew token for 10,000 sats, let's say, and maybe that gives me, well, it'll give me, let's say, half an hour of vibe coding on O3. But what do I do in the Cursor API settings? I go in and instead of the API key, I put in the Cashew token?
Yeah, exactly. And you need to change the base URL. So you just plug in api.roadster.com/v1 as a base URL. And then it should work. Like if it doesn't work, ping us on Noster.
How would it know which model to route to?
I'm not sure if Cursor has also the model selection, but the standard OpenAI models work. So if you select like O3, I think it should be available in Cursor. Then it will just redirect to that model, and it still uses the same kind of API specification. So we currently handle kind of the payments at OpenRouter. They luckily have shitcoin payments at least, so we can swap the sats to that shitcoin to fill up the balance, and that can be done pretty much in an automated way. And we didn't need to provide any KYC to OpenRouter, so that part should be pretty much anonymous.
But let's just double click on that. I want to make sure I understand and our listeners understand. So you paste the Cashew token in place of the API key, and then you change the base URL to the right one, and you choose your model.
Yeah.
Then it gets to Roadster, right? That API, the first step of that API call. And then you do a mapping from that Cashew token to the actual API key somehow, right?
Yeah, so the Cashew token acts as like a balance and the API key from your side, but we currently just route the request to OpenRouter. So we have a account set up for OpenRouter, and this account has an API key. So in our backend, there's kind of the API key set for that OpenRouter account. Mm. So kind of the proxy is just managing the outside and managing the cache token payments. And then if the request is valid, the request has enough balance, then it's like redirected to OpenRouter. The OpenRouter account gets like a subtraction in the balance, and then the request is coming back. So that's currently the workflow. But optimally, at some point, if the marketplace is online, this is like not only relying on OpenRouter. There are like a bunch of different providers you can select to, and there will be maybe different aggregated providers that route to other providers. So currently this is just OpenRouter because we wanted to make a good working MVP.
Mm-hmm. Isn't there, and I'm not super familiar with this, isn't there another provider or like OpenRouter called Grok, G-R-O-Q?
Yeah, I think you can actually access Grok models on OpenRouter, but we definitely wanted to create similar type of proxies to all of these current LLM providers. So there will be one proxy for OpenAI, one for Anthropic, one for Grok, one for OpenRouter, then maybe Together AI, whatever else there's on, mm-hmm. in terms of providers.
Hugging Face, presumably, at some point, right?
Yeah, or maybe also just some plain GPU servers with some open source models hosted by us.
Right.
But yeah. And of course, other people can just join the party. Like maybe some people have a home setup they currently use for their own personal AI, but they don't use it all day. So then they think, okay, I have this running anyways because I want to have my data private. So why not just, as long as I'm not using it, share it openly so other people can benefit and I can make some sats. So yeah.
Right. You launched under GPL3, correct?
Yeah. That license should just say that other people who want to fork it, they need to be open source as well.
Right. And then as part of that, you introduced this concept of Routester improvement proposals, or RIPs.
Yeah.
How do you, before we get into maybe some metaphorical significance of that, how do you picture community forks and RIP debates playing out?
I haven't actually thought about that, so I think I would just see how it goes and then improvise, but people are open to fork it or like put up issues, put up discussions on it. So I'm open to other ideas and opinions.
Got it. So let's talk about the name itself, RIP. Did you have some metaphorical... was it a metaphor? Did you foresee that playing out that way?
No, actually, I just thought, okay... Noster is doing like NIPS and then routes the improvement protocol, and then I realized, okay, this actually has a different meaning. Rest in peace. So there was no intention into that. So maybe there are some metaphors, but just for the joke, I put a like rest in peace image to the repository. So you see... rest in peace as like the header image, if you look into it.
You know, as a quick sidebar on the topic of RIP versus rest in peace, I recently discovered this progressive metal band called Skardust, and they're actually Bitcoiners. And they've released, I think 2 months back, they released a song from their upcoming album it's called RIP, R-I-P, and the it tells the in their view the story of Satoshi's last days, of how he left Bitcoin. It's like it's almost like his he had to rip his heart out, but also rest in peace. So I thought that was interesting there.
Okay, that's actually very interesting. Maybe I will link that song in the repository.
For sure. So before we, you know, there's some more questions I have about Roadster. But before that, you know, you shipped, let's talk about your LangChain chapter. In fact, before we even talk about Code Interpreter API and FunkChain, for again, for folks who don't, who are not super technical, and even actually even for my personal benefit, can you explain what LangChain is?
So LangChain is basically a giant framework that builds up on a few basic abstractions on like all these different abstractions that we find in the large language model space. So you have kind of clients to interact with to kind of get the tokens, get the language model out. Then you have messages, you have chat histories, you have different things like vector databases, retrieval systems, agents, and then you can even split agents into like a lot of sub abstractions. Like there's kind of like the agent itself, which is just one prompt, and then there's the agent executor, which is like more this agent loop, which is like recurringly calling the same prompt based on like a new history. So it basically is a giant library with tons of integrations to like all different things that you can imagine, to retrieve data, to integrate with like different vector databases, different data sources, different API providers, OpenAI, Anthropic, Hugging Face. So it's basically like one big collection of all of these things. So you can easily build up other things on top of that without needing to always write your own integrations, because they are all pretty universal. So you can really like plug in one provider and then swap it out to a different one without needing to change your code, or yeah, just solves a lot of pain if you build really large applications. But also a lot of people criticize that they don't want to learn like such a big library if they just want to build like a small language model prompt. So yeah, it depends on what your goal is. Like if you just want to write a prompt that summarizes a website, then you probably don't need to use LangChain. But if you want to use like complex agents working with different data sources, and you want to maybe grow your company, you have employees that are maybe familiar with one library but not the other, then they just need to learn LangChain and not like different things. So it's kind of like a big library in the that solves like problems that occur when you do like professional software development.
And LangChain is something I haven't used personally, but I have read about. And one of the things I read, and you can correct it if that doesn't make sense, Shumanik, is LangChain. I was reading LangChain is almost like a memory for AI agents, right?
Yes, so they have memory modules. So that's like one component kind of LangChain.
How does that work? Because, I mean, typically, I mean, models have their context windows, which you can think of as their short-term memory. How do the memory modules in LangChain work?
So when you break it down to like the simple API call in the model. You're basically just giving it a chat history and then computing the next message that would follow in that chat history. So you just have a chat history. You put your prompt, you write down here, what is this? And you have your previous messages, and then you just get one response back from the AI, which is the new message. So it's always like in every request, you have this list of chat messages, and then you get one new message. But if you have a memory module, this memory module is basically managing the chat history for you. So it can use external databases to artificially inject messages into your history. So if you maybe ask something about that like relates to something else, then this memory module is like taking your question and looking in the external database, okay, which bits of information could maybe be useful to answer that new question. So then it injects kind of chat messages before your question that might be useful in assisting to answer it. And so then the language model has kind of context outside of your current conversation. But for the language model, it looks like it is part of the current conversation, which then to the user seem like the model has memory, but actually it's just a separate kind of separate part of the program, which is managing how the requests are made to the model to include extra context.
Mm-hmm. And in theory, models today do have memory in the sense that it's whatever the size of their context window, correct? So yeah. What this does is synthetically extends the context window. Is that fair?
It's more like managing it. So it's kind of like smartly putting the chunks of information into that context window that are like most relevant for answering your current question.
Mm-hmm. Would it be, just thinking aloud here, Shumanik, you know, Gemini 2.5, which the pro version, which came out less than a month back, kind of blew people away because it had a million token context window. That's like five times O3's context window. Does this become necessary if, as you know, models get better tuned and compute costs go down and whatever it is, but as the progress happens and we get to a 10 million or 100 million token context window, would something like this be necessary then?
So the things that can always be mistakes happen in the retrieval process, because this is still relying on software that is like less intelligent than the actual model to kind of save some compute. So this may be more of a like trade-off. Should we just plug in the entire context without like filtering it to the model? Because the model will figure out like which chunks of information are relevant and which not. But maybe there's so much compute that it doesn't really matter to like save a few tokens. That's maybe also like similar problem to like, why don't you write everything in Rust if you can use Python? Like Rust is more efficient probably, but also takes more effort and more intelligence to kind of code up the program. But Python, just you can build so much faster, so you don't need to worry that much about your code. But in the end, it costs more from the compute point.
Right. So on you shipped, so this is before Roadster, right? You were working on LangChain and you shipped something called Code Interpreter API and FunkChain. What can you talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, so first Code Interpreter API was first. So I was just really interested in all the new things that were coming out in the AI space. And I was building like a Discord bot to just get ChatGPT on Discord. And then I wanted to have the Code Interpreter as a feature because I saw like some video on YouTube where someone had like early access to Code Interpreter. And I thought, okay, how could I build the same thing without needing to wait on OpenAI releasing it? So I tried different things and kind of reverse engineered how this could work on the backend side and to kind of make this available for people to use. So I implemented the feature on my Discord bot, and then you could use the Code Interpreter on Discord that OpenAI hasn't released yet. So this was definitely exciting for some people. And then I thought I just released the protocol alone, or more like the software, on GitHub as like separate repository, so other people can use this outside of a Discord bot. And I texted the GitHub repository to Harrison Chase, which is the LangChain founder. Then he reposted it, and it went viral on X and on GitHub. Yeah, and people could use Code Interpreter without needing to wait on OpenAI.
Going viral on GitHub is not a phrase you hear every day.
Yeah, I was number 3 in the GitHub trends.
Excellent. And was FunkChain related to that too?
Yeah, so I got more into kind of building things with language models, and I wanted to build like an automatic coding AI thing. Like nowadays you see Cursor, you see Codex, you see Claude Code and all these things. But before all of them existed, I kind of wanted to have something like this. And there were like some projects attempting to build this. And I thought, okay, maybe building a few abstractions that kind of make the code more readable and more simpler to understand helps me build like a more complex application with language models. So then I built FunkChain, which is basically a library that just makes working with language models look really clean in your code, and it makes simple prompts and especially like structured output things really really simple to implement. So it's basically a more niche developer library if you want really simple, good looking code.
Got it. So were there any lessons, either technical or philosophical, from your LangChain work that you brought to Routester?
I learned a lot about language models, and I just spent a lot of time kind of thinking about different things, how everything works. So I think if you just know a space a lot, then it creates room to think about other ideas. I think definitely just playing around with LangChain gave me exposure into the space. And then because I also then got more into Bitcoin, I learned about Noster, I learned about Lightning and different things, then my brain was just figuring out, okay, how can I combine these two interests?
When did you find out about Nostr?
I actually don't know, but I think it might be possible to look up the first account creation of my NPUB. I think that's probably the time when I learned about it.
And did you say you were at Baltic Honey Badger in 2024 or 2023?
2024.
Okay, I missed 2024. I was there in 2023.
Okay, maybe I'm there this year.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, same for me.
So you call Routster the real... Actually, one more question before on the LangChain topic. Is there any hidden LangChain features that you've snuck into Routster?
I think Routster is more the layer below. So I just learned through doing this LangChain stuff how the OpenAI API works, how all these like fundamental things work. So that kind of like played into Routster. But when building applications, at some point there maybe exists a Routster integration into LangChain. So you can then plug in Routster into complex agents, and the integration is kind of handling the payment processing and maybe swapping to different nodes based on availability. But yeah, LangChain is more the framework on top of the token level, the API level. Mm-hmm.
I think you referred to Routster either on your website or one of your Nostr posts as the real decentralized AI. Where do you draw the decentralization line, right, in practice?
Yeah, so when you get into the Bitcoin space, you build up this being annoyed of all these like shitcoin projects. And there are like so many projects which just launch some decentralized AI protocol with zero knowledge proof, and they just create a token that you can buy, and then they just create a use case for that token by having the token be the payment layer of that network. And of course they want to raise funds with that token and maybe dump it on their users. There are a lot of like decentralized AI projects, but I haven't seen any of those that kind of built on open protocols without a token attached, without a just using existing monetary protocols that are like not affiliated with any company, with any small organization.
Yeah, makes sense. There certainly are a lot of those shitcoin projects out there. And now, at this point, if AI is all the buzz, right? So they say, oh yeah, we have a LLM-based, you name it, and then we have a token, crypto and AI, and then next thing they'll throw in quantum in there as well. Anything to pump their token.
Yeah, like I think quantum is still like a topic with huge discussions, but I also like had a discussion about like these decentralized AI things, and they use like trusted enclaved machines, so or whatever. Like they use like some terms that sound like pretty secure, and you think, okay, they use like advanced technology, like cryptography, decentralization, like that sounds all really good. But in the end, like combining these things doesn't really make sense. And the only way something like this makes sense is like building it on fully decentralized base layers like Noster and Lightning or Cashew. So as long as you pull in any layer that is like not fully decentralized, it kind of makes the entire platform like worthless.
Yeah, for sure. What are the future plans for Routester? It was just released, what, a couple of days back, at least to the public? Is that right?
Yeah, so I think we have been working on it for like 4 weeks now, maybe 3 weeks. I think 3 weeks ago, says GitHub. So it's pretty early. We just published a public-facing website, which is providing a chat app that you can use to interact with it, and also just a landing page explaining things, and you can browse like all the models that are available, and you see prices in millisats or in sats. And then we hosted our own proxy that accepts cache tokens. We kind of tried to define the bounds of the project. So defining like the routes, the improvement protocols, putting up a documentation that is not fully optimized yet. There might be some pages that are generated by AI. but we will try to get like the ecosystem at a place so that other people can look at it and understand like what it is and potentially contribute to it. But then we want to launch the marketplace, and also one part we haven't talked about is a evaluation system. So because if you have a decentralized marketplace, anyone can basically list a service onto that marketplace. So you need like kind of some source of trust. This can be Noster. So you might trust the provider that your friends trust. But also we want to have a separate layer of trust. So we want to have evaluation services into the integrated kind of onto the marketplace. So different people can run evaluation services. We will run one at Routester. And then like this evaluation service is basically running benchmarks on all the providers. So they test the models and see if the answers are matching kind of the scores that are publicly available. So because maybe some provider is hosting Llama 3, but actually under the hood he's only providing Llama 2. Mm-hmm. So how do you want to test that in a way? Maybe the provider is just running Llama 3 when he receives a request of that evaluation service. So if they see the matching IP or something. So we also want to anonymize these requests, like make them at like random intervals, kind of test the marketplace and see if all the providers are actually providing what they claim to offer, and then publish these results on Noster. Mm-hmm. So everyone can kind of see, okay, these are the good providers and the malicious ones are bad, and then they just don't get traffic. So it's kind of automatically filtering malicious peoples from the marketplace.
You know, just thinking aloud here, Shrumanik, I think not agreed. There's one Noster angle of the web of trust, right? You can, if your social graph likes this provider, then that's one level of trust. And this evaluation service, or maybe evaluation verification attestation service, whatever you call it, right? Even that makes sense to have on Noster, because you can publish you know, you can have multiple evaluators, and they can publish an attestation with cryptographic proof of what exactly they evaluated, and that can present itself in the form of a Noster badge.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to use the review spec on Noster. So these providers can basically release, like, maybe every day or every few days or every hour, depending on how often you want to do it, kind of a review to that node, to that provider. And then they just publish these reviews to all providers they tested. And these reviews will be available on Noster. And then maybe in, like, some front ends, you just render, like, really good reviews as, like, a certified badge or something.
Mm-hmm. What happens in the scenario where a provider rug pulls? They take the cashew token and they're out.
Yeah, so if we have good software, then every request will basically just use the minimum amount as, like, one token, and then kind of cycle the token each request. So in that case, you don't lose much, like maybe like 50 sats mm-hmm. or something, and then the provider didn't give you the service, so then you maybe flag it, you give it a bad rating or something, mm-hmm. And not use it again, you put it on your blacklist. Mm-hmm. And providers have the incentive to provide a good service because they want to make money and they want to have other people use their service. Yeah. So if you rug pull, it's the same as, like, in the Silk Road marketplace where people bought certain things with Bitcoin. Like, the bad providers didn't got any traffic because people were not buying from providers that had bad reviews.
Yeah, that makes sense. What you said sounded a bit like, the immediate analogy I went to is, are you familiar with the Fountain podcasting app?
Yeah, I looked a bit into it, but I'm not really familiar with it.
Yeah, it's a value-for-value podcasting 2.0 app. And one of the ways in which the audience can support the podcasters is they can stream sats as they listen. Right? So and you can set that amount. You can say, every minute I want to send 5 sats or 10 sats or whatever it is. Right? So every minute of the podcast you listen to, that much gets deducted from your wallet. And this sort of sounds a bit like that. Is it possible to stream sats for tokens?
Yeah, so it is similar, but more as, like, a request basis. So you give the prompt, you give the language model a certain prompt, and then you get a stream of token, but at the end of that stream, the provider tells you, okay, this is how much total token this request was, and so this is how much got deducted from your wallet. And if you do it on a per request basis, you basically initiate a request, you get back your response, and you get back a refund cashew token of the remaining balance. So then for each language model chat message in your chat app, you basically see a deduction of your sats. Like, maybe you ask hello and it tells you, like, how are you today? Then this is, like, just a small message. It just required maybe a few millisats. So then you get back the remaining balance. So just a few millisats got deducted from your balance. And then if you ask the next message and you ask, like, something bigger, you maybe paste a huge blog post into it, ask, can you rewrite that, make it sound more human, make it sound more happy or something. And then you get back a giant blog post that's like a larger message. So then just for that one request, you get a larger balance deducted, but it's still on a per message basis. So not like streaming the actual single token. You're not paying for a single token, but more as like a per request basis.
And what happens if you don't have enough? So like you said, right, maybe I take a PDF of a book that's 400 pages long. So I'm guessing that'll be something like 200, 300,000 tokens. And you obviously haven't bought enough eCash for it. What happens in that scenario?
Yeah, so the provider will set kind of a minimum token amount you need to send. And this minimum should optimally be kind of the maximum possible price you pay for one single request. So optimally the provider sets the minimum in a way that if your request uses up the entire context length of the prompt, then you don't get any refund. Then your one token is kind of like paying for everything. But if you don't use up everything, then you get like a refund for it.
Got it. Well, look, I can't wait to start using Routester. Oh, one more question on Routester, actually, before I move on to the last topic. Is there a web interface like you get in Perplexity or ChatGPT, right? You just go in and then there's a chat and you can choose your models from the dropdown there, or is it all based off of API calls?
Yeah, so we have a chat interface on Routester.com. So if you visit the page, there's like a button, chat now, and then you can sign in with Noster, or you can just create a new kind of key pair if you don't want to put in your account. But this sign-in just is used for the Cashew wallet. So the entire website is not having any backend, so there are no requests made to a backend, so the key you insert into the website like stays in your browser. You can also check the code or just like deploy the backend yourself, the front end yourself. It's on the GitHub. And then with that Cashew wallet in your browser, the chat app is like creating tokens for each request that you make and taking the refund back. So it might be not the same experience you have on ChatGPT. They have a lot of advanced features nowadays, but it's like a simple chat app that you can use. You don't need to sign up. You don't need to provide an email. You can just charge up your accounts with a few sats. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm certainly, I can't wait to give it a try. And folks listening, please do check out Routester.com, correct?
Yeah. So it's Routester.
Routester.com. And I'll definitely include that in the show notes. So before you go, Shrimanik, I guess a two-part question. Which is your favorite model, AI model, as of today? And second, has there been a moment in the last 1 or 2 months when you've been using one of these AI models and you're like, oh, wow, I can see the AGI future. I've gotten a glimpse of that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely O3. And especially in the ChatGPT experience, people might not be happy with ChatGPT because it's a company run by people that you might not trust. But just like looking objectively at like what they built, I think it's really insane as a product, because O3 has this new kind of paradigm where it's like doing web searches in the thinking process, and especially it can do like really long running searches. It's not the same as this deep research feature, And I've tested it with a few images where I just asked it, like, where is this location? And it went kind of through it. It had that image as like a file. It runs some Python prompts, Python code snippets to crop down the image, like look at different like subsections of the image. And then it found like some kind of street sign in the back. And then it like searched that street sign on Google. It found different places. And then at some point it gave me like the exact location of that image just from like a tiny street sign somewhere in the back. Like I didn't even saw that myself. And I've tried like multiple of these kind of examples, and it's really insane like how sophisticated the analysis is from that model.
I would 100% agree with you about O3. It's the first time I've, you know, there've been prior to that I've used some models and said, "Oh, this is kind of cool. I can kind of see where this is going." But I think O3 just takes it to that almost magical level. I mean, Gemini 2.5 is close, but it doesn't have that magic. I mean, to your example, right? And I played that game too, the GeoGuessr game. I gave it a group photo from like 20 years ago, right? There were like 30 people in there, and it was in some remote place in Papua New Guinea or whatever it is, and it did exactly what you're saying, right? It looked at the vegetation, it zoomed in, looked at the leaves, and then I saw it zooming into the faces of of the people. It looked at the shirt collar, the logo. So not only did it give me the location, it also gave me the year in which it was taken based on the film grain quality, the style of shirt. It was saying, "Oh, this is a Calvin Klein, this kind of shirt that was, you know, not released before this day." It was remarkable.
It's insane.
Certainly. Yeah. I hope this is, we haven't hit a wall, Shrumanik. I'd love to see a little more progress because it feels like we're close.
Yeah. I think like it gets really insane when we have the open source kind of O3 type models. And but also one big thing which makes this part really impressive, it's like not only the model, it's like also the software around that model. Like especially if you look at the ChatGPT, how it looks, it's like really, really advanced kind of chat interface. It's not like message response. It's a lot of stuff that is done to like make the experience in that chat app like really good. And you see kind of what the model is doing. You can monitor like the thinking process. Like that part is also really impressive.
Yeah, for sure. So lots to look forward to, hopefully, with the future AI models, but certainly with Routester, which I'm going to start playing around with. So, Shrumanik, any closing thoughts?
Just give it a try.
Excellent. I certainly will. I'll have it up in the show notes. Anyone listening, please check out Routester. Thank you, Shrumanik, for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.